If you speak the truth, have a foot in the stirrup.
Hello and welcome to another installment of the Sea Realm Podcast. I'm your host, KMO, and this is episode number 535, The Real Star Trek, with guest JP of Egotastic Funtime, prepared for release onto the World Wide Web on Monday, December 3rd, 2018. And in this episode of the podcast, I'm going to play yesterday's edition of Sea Realm Radio. So this was a live call-in. JP called in from Oklahoma, and we talked about Star Trek. We talked about the Orville. We also talked about YouTube and how it provides people like JP and, to a lesser extent, me to, you know, reach an audience, make videos, distribute them, that sort of thing. But at the same time, it is also a tool for exerting control over the things, the opinions that people want to express, the range of opinion that is acceptable. And so, like social media, YouTube definitely has its downsides. But whether when you add up all the pluses and minuses, whether it is a net negative or a net positive, well, that is a question that is open to disagreement, I think. So, for those of you who are not interested in Star Trek, like on a really deep geeky level, because we're going to be talking about intellectual property and rights issues and things of this nature. So, you know, in all honesty, if that's not your cup of tea, you can skip this episode of the podcast. One, I'll never know. And two, I'll take no offense. I realize that even for an esoteric show like this one, this is particularly aimed at a subset of the audience. But if you dig Star Trek and you're not watching The Orville, good golly, you should watch The Orville. And to really get excited about it, or, you know, maybe just to get a taste of the enthusiasm that people who are into the Orville have, you should check out Egotastic Funtime, the YouTube channel of this week's guest, JP. Now, normally I would just say his name and then segue right into the show. But before I do that, I want to say that there's a couple other YouTube channels that I find particularly useful when it comes to following Star Trek Discovery and its relationship to, you know, the intellectual property rights held by CBS and those held by Paramount. First among those is a channel called Midnight's Edge. They have done some really excellent videos, which I would consider to be investigative journalism, on the topic of why Star Trek Discovery doesn't look like Star Trek, why it doesn't feel like Star Trek. It's not just a creative decision or a series of creative decisions. It is required. There is a written contract. The show is developed under a joint agreement with Bad Robot, that is J.J. Abrams' production company. J.J. Abrams directed the first two of the Star Trek movies starring Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto and Zoe Saldana and Carl Urban and that crew. And the movie license is separate from the TV license when it comes to Star Trek, because it used to be that one company, Paramount, owned CBS, and so they own the rights to Star Trek just everywhere. But Paramount and CBS are right now different corporate entities, and Paramount got the movie rights and CBS got the TV rights. And I'm actually simplifying it. It's a much more complex chain of events and a series of mergers, acquisitions, divisions, transfers of rights that has taken place over the years. And basically the only entity right now that has the right to make Star Trek that looks like Star Trek is CBS, and they, for reasons which are just beyond comprehension for me, have chosen not to. So a lot of my understanding of what's happening behind the scenes at CBS and Star Trek comes from the channel Midnight's Edge. There's another one, not as useful, but very fun, and also centered on many of the same topics, and that is called Doomcock, which on the radio I named as Doom Rooster. I think you can say cock when you mean rooster on the radio, but, you know, the FCC fine accrues to me, not to the radio station. And, you know, the radio station really couldn't afford it any more than I could. But for speaking like a normal human being on the radio, the penalty is hundreds of thousands of dollars, which I simply do not have. And even if I had it, the last thing in the world I would want to do with it is give it to the FCC. So I err on the side of caution when on live radio. Okay, here is my conversation with JP, who was calling in from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
You're listening to WOOL Black Sheep Radio on 91.5 FM, Sea Realm Radio with KMO.
Hey, hey, Bellows Falls. I am KMO. You are tuned in to Sea Realm Radio, and hopefully I've got a guest on the line. JP, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, hey. So we are going to be talking about fun stuff, comedy, science fiction, TV, making a life creatively online, and maybe some not so fun stuff, which, you know, I won't spoil the mood by mentioning any of that early. But before
well,
we do
all the things you mentioned,
yeah,
could also be not fun.
Yeah, that's true. We will unpack that at length. But before we do, I need to make a couple announcements. First is Second Saturday Poetry Open Mic. Alrighty, public service announcements dispatched. So I'm talking with JP, who does videos on the YouTubes, and mostly about media that I enjoy, particularly The Orville. That's the Seth MacFarlane real Star Trek show that isn't actually Star Trek. And also the so-called real Star Trek, which is to say the stuff being produced by the legal owners of that IP. And that's about as much as I can say in a neutral tone of voice about that.
So, oh, they're so neutral.
Yeah. Well, that's my best approximation. But hey, let me stop talking and have you talk. Say just a bit about your motivations. What drives you to work a day job and then come home and spend many, many hours in the video editing software putting together these videos?
Well, they're both connected. I work a day job so that I can have a roof over my head.
Kind of important.
Then, and then I do. I make content for the internet, so I can hopefully, you know, not go to my full-time job eventually and still have a roof over my head, but also to express myself and talk about the things that I want to talk about. You know, I'm older now, many of us are, and I long for the days when I was younger, when I would just sit around with buddies and we would just talk about, you know, movies and music and, you know, oh, what do you think is going to happen next week on Lost? You know, something like that. And I long for those days. I don't have that anymore in my current life. So I decided, hey, I want to make videos where I just talk about those things. I want to talk about, hey, what do you think is going to happen next week on the Orville? What do you think of the latest episode of quote-unquote Star Trek Discovery? You know, things like that. So I decided to, you know, find my inner child again and start talking about these things. And luckily we live in a year where we can go online and do these things. And I also wanted to perform a little bit. I used to be a performer in my younger days, and so my content is more of a performance as opposed to just, you know, hitting record and going, hello my lovelies, today I want to talk about this. You know, I have, you know, something prepared. Lots of editing.
Yes. The editing is, I don't want to say it's obvious because, you know, you do it well. But to me, I've made videos. I know that the editing is very time consuming, and I can see that there is a lot of editing in what you do.
Oh, a whole lot. It's the only reason I don't put out more stuff, because it takes a long time. It'll take me 8 to 10 hours from start to finish to just do a hopefully 10-minute video.
That's pretty good time, actually. I mean, for me, a video of that length is more like 15 hours.
Well, I don't count the times where I was writing scripts and researching.
Well, hey, let's, you know, you mentioned that you're getting older and you don't have the group of friends that you hang out with like you used to. I'm in the same boat. You know, the friends that I was tight with when I was in my 20s and such, they're far flung. You know, they're all over the country.
Yeah,
and I don't
live... I'm the one all over the country now.
Well, as am I. I'm not in the place where I grew up and where I had friends.
Yeah.
And I went to a dance party here in town last night. It's a monthly dance party, and danced furiously for a time, and man, do my knees hurt now.
Yeah, I don't even have to dance for that to be the case.
But I heard this was going around on the radios maybe a year or more ago. There was a study which basically looked at men, you know, older men, middle age and older, and found that they don't make friends like they did in their 20s, and they don't make friends like women do. So women get a lot of social support and affirmation and such from other women, and men, for the most part, we are particularly, you know, older guys are have been socialized and raised not to be like emotionally vulnerable or expressive with anybody except, you know, our one intimate partner, usually a woman.
That's exactly how I am, but I mean, I'm not. I don't always have to be that way. I mean, when I am. You know, when I meet new people, I'm very open and, you know, outgoing, which is probably why they flee. So I'm very open, outgoing, willing to have serious conversations, fun conversations, especially fun conversations. But I don't know. I just think I got to that point where I'm like, you're kind of boring me, so I'm just going to go watch TV. You know, you become a little bit of a get off my lawn type of type of personality as you get older. Which is why, you know, I like doing my show. I have full control of, you know, what's going on. And if people don't like it, I don't have to read those comments. But I'm very lucky. For the most part, people say very nice things.
You know,
which is very hard to happen, when you make internet content.
Particularly on YouTube.
Yeah.
YouTube comments, even though there's no, it's not like Twitter, you know, where you've got this space constraint. You can stretch out and you can be a decent human being and use punctuation and everything. But there's something about YouTube. I find it even myself when I'm posting comments that I'm more aggressive there than I am on any other platform, really.
Yeah, well, it's I don't know if it's YouTube per se, even though that's where it's at because YouTube is so popular. It's just as a society, this anonymity that we get from the internet just it allows us to have this deep, dark, bad thing that's inside of each and every one of us to come out because we know there's no consequences for the most part. And it's something we have to actively, prohibit within ourselves. I personally, I mean, I used to see a video and I'd be like, oh, this is stupid, whatever. But I stopped doing that because I'm like, hey, this is a waste of my time. The best thing I can do if I see a video I don't like, which is rare because I'm like, well, I clicked on it. It's my fault. If I see a video I don't like, I just move on. I don't thumbs up or thumbs down or comment because that actually does more for that video than just leaving the video and going somewhere else. I mean, I'll get people that will say something negative on one of my videos. They'll thumbs down it and they'll just say something, you know, snipey or snarky. And I'm like, you know, that actually benefits me. I have audience interaction with
that's
this
an
video.
Engagement right there.
It's an engagement, exactly.
That's a quarter in your cup. Thanks.
Pretty much.
You know, we'll talk about Star Trek at length, but I'm going to focus on YouTube, even though this comment's going to involve Star Trek. So the, what do they call it? STD. Star Trek Discovery. Season 2 begins, what, sometime in January? And
I think it's January 17th, I want to say.
Sounds familiar.
Thursday, the Thursday, which I'm kind of unhappy with, because Thursdays is when that's the Orville time slot.
I don't watch any of this stuff in real time, you know, so
I'm
totally time-shifted. But the Season 2 trailer that premiered at Comic-Con is up on YouTube, and I think you've mentioned this in a video. It's got something like 6 million views, but not nearly enough likes or dislikes or comments to really make that a believable number.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, all right, so if you see this Star Trek Discovery Season 2 Comic-Con trailer, it has 6.5, 6.6 million views, right? But as far as likes go, it had like 1,200 likes and 300 and some dislikes. And it had 700 and something comments. Those numbers are nothing compared to 6.5 million views. Any video that has 6.5 million views, just by accident, people accidentally clicking on stuff, should have more than 1,000 likes or dislikes and more comments. My video that I did about that topic has, I think, 30,000 views, and I have more comments than that, and more likes, more dislikes than the 6.5 million view video. So in order for that to happen, that means that most of the views that video has are bots.
Yep.
I can't say for sure, of course, but usually in that case, that means CBS probably, or whoever runs Star Trek, we won't name them, I guess, they must have paid for views.
You know, we can name them, I think. I think the names that people should know are, Alex Kurtzman, Akiva Goldman, what's his name? Les Moonves, now out the door at CBS.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. And I think the date that everybody should have in mind is, July 22nd, 2019, which is when the CBS deal with the Bad Robot production company to create Star Trek that is 25% not recognizable as Star Trek expires. And then if they wanted to, they could do a show that looks like it's set in the same universe as all the other shows, you know, the Star Trek shows that we have watched and loved over the years.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so hoping that they would just put the whole Picard show on hold until after that date is passed and they can do it as an actual Star Trek show, because I think doing a Picard show with the Bad Robot license is just going to throw mud on, you know, the next generation and that the legacy of that show.
Yeah, and it's also the 25% difference isn't something I quite understand, because just the fact that the show would be produced now, 2018, 2019, and the fact that effects look, you know, better, and, you know, writing's a little bit different, and the fact that, you know, even though he still looks good, Patrick Stewart looks 25% older than he did before. Yeah. I think all of that would be enough to make the show be 25% different, but still live up to what Star Trek is supposed to be. I mean, there's nothing in the clause, or whatever legal jargon you want to use, that says, because Star Trek has to be a certain percentage different, that you have to, make the Klingons look weird, and you have to make it dark and gritty, and you have to have it be a season-long story arc. I don't see why all those mistakes that they made had anything to do with the 25% different thing. I mean, you could just have it, they're uniforms look 25% more modern. You know, I don't understand why they decided to make the mistakes that they made just because they had to do 25% different.
Well, on the topic of things. Studios doing things to, reach out online and maybe manipulate public opinion, in the comments, there's 749 comments to the Star Trek Discovery Season 2 Comic-Con trailer. And early on, I mean, I guess it's later on, but a comment from a month ago is by a guy named Ben B. And Ben B. writes, "Klingons with hair, D7, lighthearted vibes, action, adventure, curiosity, hope, emotion. This is Star Trek, plain and simple."
And I read that comment. I'm familiar with that comment.
Yeah, if you click,
I read every comment.
If you click on Ben B's name, though, and you go to his YouTube profile, he is an obvious sock puppet. He has 11 subscriptions. So, you know, most people who use YouTube regularly have hundreds of them. And he's got 11. His account is 8 months old. There's no biographical description. There's no content uploaded. Actually, there's one video uploaded, and it's just a clip of the Klingons from the first episode of Discovery, you know, season one. And some of his other subscriptions are like CBS All Access and some Star Trek game. This is clearly a sock puppet account. But
I wouldn't doubt it.
But Ben B., later on, when anybody posts a negative comment, just comes in and says things like, shh, go away. Or, you know, this is clearly somebody who part of their day job is to try to interact with, you know, the users and the people who are interested in this content and sell the studio's perspective.
He's a Russian hacker.
No, I mean, he seems to be a native English speaker. I suspect is somebody who works on the show, you know, or at the network.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's I wouldn't doubt that at all, because, here's something very strange. Because the video that you're my video that you're talking about that talks about this stuff I put out last week. And when I started making the video, the whole purpose was of it, I wasn't going to talk about all this, you know, the 6.5 million views. That wasn't the plan. The plan was is I read all these funny anti-Star Trek Discovery comments on Twitter, on the Star Trek Discovery Twitter page. Like, you know, they had their trailer, and I was like, oh, let me read these comments, what people are saying about it, because I noticed that on the Orville page of their season two trailer, that people are just like, oh, I love it, I can't wait, this, you know, a lot of support. I'm like, let me read the ones over on Star Trek Discovery. And it was the funniest, you know, you guys ruined Star Trek, and people saying all this funny stuff, and it was just over and over and over and over and over again. And there was hardly any love for the show in there. And I'm like, oh, that's hilarious. I'll do an episode where I read the comments. I was going to read the comments between both shows just to show the difference. And then I went back the next day, or maybe it was 2 days later, to start screen capping all those comments, and they were gone.
Yeah.
There was nothing but positive comments. And I was like, oh, no, they got to it.
Tending that garden.
Yeah, all of a sudden, every comment on there was just, I love this show, I can't wait, and I couldn't find a single snarky comment. And I'm like, oh, no, they're, you know, it's like, they've got to it, you know, the, you know, I'm like, oh, no, just something like that happened once before to me last year on some topic I was doing. But anyway, so then I saw online that there was a rumor that there were some emergency meetings, something like that, with CBS trying to figure out how to save Star Trek. So I put it all together in one big video. But that just goes to show that they are, what's the word I'm looking for, tailoring the reactions for their show. Just like we know when Star Trek Discovery first came out last year on Rotten Tomatoes, they were giving it like, oh, it's certified fresh, this is the best Star Trek ever, even though all the fans were hating it. All the critics loved it. I'm like, oh, they're paying people for positive reviews. They're, you know, they're putting little moles into the comment sections, things like that. And it's just very obvious. If you pay attention for as long as I've been paying attention, it's a very obvious thing. But someone, you know, someone's just coming by to look real quick, they're going to think there's a lot of support for the show. But I don't know. It's very suspect.
So tell me about I watch a lot of YouTube content where commenters are, you know, they're showing clips from movies that I like, or, you know, TV shows or things that I like, and talking about the property, you know, doing film analysis, things like that. I never try anything like that because I am clueless about how to negotiate the copyright, you know, copyright strike, IP minefield. How do you do that?
It's something I've been – I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I mean – that's the topic. Enlighten us.
Okay, that's the topic. Yeah, it's something I deal with all the time, and I'm always learning. And when I think I learn something, you know, depending on the mood of whoever I'm covering or talking about, CBS, they'll move the goalposts on you, right? So I have certain things that I do that I've learned over the years that I've been doing this. Is like I use a lot of clips. When I'm doing a full review of something, I always do a recap at the beginning of my episode, which usually takes about a minute where I just recap the entire episode, but I use clips. But I always try to – I move the speed of the video to, like, usually double time. I make it go double time as fast. And I try to use only clips that are 9 seconds or less. Usually if you get to that 10th second, that's when you're going to get flagged. But also it's – I don't even think I should have to do that because I'm doing a review. I'm not just stealing content, you know. I'm reviewing what they put out so people can, you know, and I write jokes and give commentaries and things like that. So, but that's one of the things I do. One thing I can tell you when you're making a video, stay away from using anybody's music. Music is the number one thing you have to avoid. So YouTube is great in the fact that they provide a lot of royalty-free music in their little creation section. I mean, thousands of songs. I use many of them. Or I'll go and I'll find a like say I wanted to use the Star Trek theme song, I'll go find somebody that did a cover of the song with a synthesizer, or they did a MIDI version of the song, and then that's always fine. But don't...
Do you seek their permission to use it?
It depends. If it's a MIDI, I don't. If it's, you know, something else, I'll either... what I do is I'm like, oh, it's a big channel, so I'll ask them. So it's very, it happens very rarely that I really never do that. If it's a small channel, what I'll do is I'll give them credit and link their actual video in the comments and tell people, hey, you need to go, and if you like this, go watch it, the full version. Because my version that I'm using, I'm always talking over, so you can barely hear their song anyway.
Right. Just creating a sort of sonic texture.
Yeah, and I put a real low volume just so it's, because I can't stand hearing my own voice without something underneath. I mean, I'm not even joking. I cannot stand listening to my own voice unless there's something underneath, at, you know, that, you know, kind of cuts the, you know, takes the edge off a little bit for me.
Well, you're setting a vibe, you know, you're creating a mood with the all the different elements, both visual and auditory, in your videos. Mm-hmm. And I mm-hmm. think, you know, you do it very well. So I think your intuition...
Well, thank you.
You report it as, you know, not liking your own voice, but I think your intuition is right on, that this needs a little something extra in order to achieve the effect that I have in mind.
Yeah, sometimes. And also it helps with certain jokes, because sometimes, you know, not sometimes, a lot of times I'll be... saying something, I'll have music underneath, and then boom, I'll have a quick joke, just a couple words at the, you know, as a tag, and I stop the music right when I do that, and it kind of just helps boost the joke.
So you are manipulating your audience.
Yeah, and also for creators out there, besides the YouTube music library, which is extensive and really a lot of great stuff on there and easy to search, there's also lots of channels on YouTube that are called, you know, you just type in royalty-free music. And that stuff is meant, people create it, and it's meant for people to download and use in their videos.
Yeah. When you do that, you're doing them a favor.
Yes. I hope so. They're doing me a favor.
So how have your relations been with CBS since you have started doing reviews of Star Trek Discovery material?
Well, we never... got along in the first place, but it didn't mean that they weren't aware that I existed.
Well, that was probably the easiest portion of your relationship.
Yeah, it was very easy. It was, years ago, we got along fine. I watched and consumed their content and loved it. But I do get flagged a lot for my reviews. And it's weird, because not necessarily because I use video clips, but I'll use just pictures. Because I decided, hey, with them, I'm just going to use, like, I'll do, you know, they have the new Short Treks, which are these little short skits, Star Trek skits that they're putting out once a month in hopes that it'll bring people on to CBS All Access. Like, people, I don't know why people would want to pay $5.99 for a 10-minute episode per month. But anyway, I decided, hey, I'm going to do recreations of their... of the Short Trek. So I redo all the voices, and, you know, I'll rewrite the lines to be funny. And some lines are funny anyway. And I'll do these little recreations, and I don't use any video from the episodes. I just use some pictures. Cause I figured, hey, that'd be, you know, a good way to not get a copyright flag, but they still copyright flagged it manually. I mean, YouTube will do some automatic. They have bots out there that are looking to, find infringements on copyright, which is fine. But CBS manually, someone says, hey, I don't like this video. It's not being nice to us, so let's flag it. And you can't really fight about it. So that's our relationship. So our relationship changed a little bit where I'm like, okay, instead of just reviewing fairly Star Trek Discovery, my other goal will be to do full in-depth recaps with no pictures. So hopefully people will watch my content to get caught up on Star Trek as opposed to, you know, paying CBS All Access for their silly little app to get caught up on Star Trek. And they're going to hate it anyway. So they might as well just get caught up with me as opposed to going to, you know, paying CBS's app.
You are listening to Sea Realm Radio on WOOL 91.5, Bellows Falls, Vermont. I'm KMO. I'm talking with JP. We're talking about, ostensibly, we were going to talk about media that we like, but right now we're talking about media companies that we don't like and their practices. But let's shift gears and go into something that we like, that we both have just unreserved enthusiasm for, and that is The Orville. Tell us about The Orville. Yes.
The Orville, the real Star Trek,
right.
which is something that nobody expected when the show was, when The Orville was first announced. It was publicized badly. Fox didn't know what to do with it, and so they kind of gave us the impression that it was a Star Trek spoof, kind of in the vein of Spaceballs or Galaxy Quest. And then the first episode came out, Old Wounds, and it looked very much like 90s Star Trek. And we're like, oh, that's cool. And it had lots of jokes. And it had a lot of humor, but also had like a serious side to it, a real sci-fi vibe going on, whether you could tell they were taking it seriously. And towards the end of the first episode, I was like, that wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I kind of felt like the way I felt when I'd watch a new episode of, you know, Star Trek The Next Generation back in the 90s. And or for some of us, even the late 80s. And I was like, wow. And then the second episode came out, Command Performance, which really, besides the humor, really showed a hope of a utopian future. We're working together. We're a crew that cares about each other, and we want to do the right thing. And there was this moment where the character, Alara, who's the security chief, she's currently in command of the ship. She's going with the captain and the second in command were taken hostage, and she was told to just leave them behind. It's not worth it. And the crew was mad at her because she decided to follow the orders she was given. And then eventually she goes, we're going to go get them. We're going to get our people. And the whole crew cheered and they all rushed to their stations. And I was like, wow, that's hope. I felt hope. It's been a long time since the sci-fi show didn't have, just everybody at each other's throats or the zombies came out all of a sudden. I'm like, this is amazing. This is great. And that's when I knew this is Star Trek. It's not called Star Trek, but it's living up to the ideas of Star Trek, where we have a utopian future where, humanity's best days are ahead of us, not behind us. And we can work together and embrace each other's differences. And that's when I knew Star Trek was back. But then Star Trek came back. And I was like, oh, that's not Star Trek. So, and I'm not the only one. Most Trekkies, / Trekkers, if you go back far enough, we all moved over to the Orville. So the Orville is something that's become beloved in the Star Trek community, whereas current Star Trek is not so beloved.
No, but the people who do like it are aggressive in their liking it and in their disdain for people who, don't like it.
Yeah, and here's the thing about Star Trek Discovery. If it wasn't called Star Trek, it would be it'd be an okay show. It'd be an okay sci-fi show. I mean, it does have its problems just as a show. It has nothing to do with Star Trek aspect of it, but I would watch it and be like, oh, this space show Discovery is, but it's an interesting show. I totally dig it, but the fact that they're calling it Star Trek is what really is rubbing people the wrong way, and because it really doesn't live up to Gene Roddenberry's vision in the slightest. But the people that do like it, I'm glad that they like it. It's just most people that have been, longtime Star Trek fans don't like it, but I'm glad that some people do like it. I just don't know if it's enough canceled as soon as the Picard series comes up.
Well, I want it to be canceled. I'm I will watch the second season, possibly grudgingly. I mean, there are aspects of it that I like, and I watched every episode twice. I watched it once just to take in the plot, and then I watched it again to really give it, a critical eye. Give it some scrutiny.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And some of the episodes, like early on when Paul Stamets, who is actually a real mycologist living today, and he's also a character on this show, It's not the same person, but the same name, and they're both interested in mushrooms. And this guy is in charge of this secret project where they have this spore drive that basically lets them leap anywhere in the universe at any time, sort of like destroying the whole premise of a show like Voyager, you know, where the ship gets thrown from one quadrant of the galaxy to the other, and it's going to take them decades to get back home at top speed, you know.
And also with the spore drive and the ship being able to just jump to anywhere it wants to go, essentially. I'm like, oh, so they instead of having transporters, they basically had it so the ship can transport.
It's basically a TARDIS now.
A transporter.
Discovery is a TARDIS that looks like a Star Trek spaceship. But I had set off to try to say something I liked about the show, and I segued off into a criticism. So let me try that again. Early on, the character of Paul Stamets, who is the scientist who is researching the so-called mycelial spore network that allows them to jump around in the universe like this, he's a real jerk. You know, and that's what I'd say on the radio. If this were a podcast, I'd say something else. But he starts interacting with these mushrooms, you know, this mycelial entity, and it's his personality starts to change in a way that would indicate, like, you know, this guy is doing psilocybin every other day, you know, for weeks on end. He's getting all lovey-dovey and he's getting kind of hippie-ish, and you know, his personality starts to shift. And I really enjoyed that. I thought, I thought he was an unbearable character to start with, and I thought, oh, please don't put him on screen anymore. And then as he started to, you know, kind of get the vibe from the mushrooms, I was like, all right, I can be with this. But it didn't really last. I mean, the stuff that works in the show, they don't know how to keep doing it.
Yeah, well, the thing with that, because I made a mental note of that whole scenario as well, where he was a jerk. And I was like, and then I was like, well, everybody on the show's a jerk. Everybody hates each other. Everybody
except
has
Tilly.
A beef with somebody else on the show. I'm like, instantly right there, not Star Trek. But then he has that situation where he was under the influence of the spore drive or the mushrooms, and he was getting, he was a little too hippy-dippy, a little too groovy, but it was fun. And then afterwards, though, he was past that effect, but he became, he's less of a jerk now, though. I did notice, I'm like, okay, he's back to being Stamets again. But he is a little bit nicer. He is a little bit. So they made a change, and to me, it kind of felt like they were doing a rewrite to adjust to complaints people were having, which they did a lot throughout the season. Because unlike the Orville, where everything is written completely before they start filming, Star Trek Discovery is a little bit more like a regular TV show where they're kind of writing it and filming it as they're going along and making adjustments as needed. Where I believe they actually had to get rid of the tardigrade. I think the tardigrade, they got rid of the tardigrade in episode 4 or something like that. And I think they had to do it sooner than they wanted to because of the whole problem with the tardigrade lawsuit and the gentleman that claims that they stole ideas from his tardigrade video game.
And which... clearly they did.
clearly they did. Somebody did. I mean, CBS might not even have been aware of it, but somebody in the staff somewhere was aware of it.
Yeah, they didn't steal just that one idea. I mean, the similarities between the characters in the game and the characters on the TV show are striking.
Yeah, there's too many. I mean, but yeah, they I believe it's Anas Abdin, who's the creator of the game, he was in talks with CBS. And CBS said, okay, we'll get rid of the tardigrade, trying to appease him a little bit. And they did get rid of the tardigrade, which kind of also kind of makes it seem like they admit that they were in the wrong. But so it seems like it was kind of a rewrite, throughout the season. And the same with Paul Stamets. They, rewrote his character a little bit so that, still as much of a jerk as needed for the show because everyone's pretty much a jerk on the show. But he is a little bit more tolerable. I actually really like Paul Stamets now. The actor that plays him, Anthony Stapp, I believe his name is?
Yes.
I could be wrong. I like that guy, and I actually feel like he would make a great addition to the Orville. I'm like, he would probably fit in, I would think. You know, be a little bit nicer of a character.
Speaking of the Orville, Let's shift back to what we like. I recently on Netflix rewatched seasons 3 and 4 of Star Trek Enterprise. Where actually it was just called Enterprise back when it was originally on.
I love season 3 and season 4. I love those seasons.
Me too. I loved them more watching them now. Probably this was the third time I've been through. Loved them more on the third time through than I did the first two.
And, wow.
Yeah, and Seth MacFarlane, who is the showrunner of the Orville and who plays the main character, Captain Ed Mercer, was on.
And
go ahead.
I was going to say, and he writes most of the episodes, almost completely.
Yeah, it's his baby, basically.
Yeah.
He's a lover of Star Trek from way back, and he was actually a character. He played a character, a very minor role, on Star Trek Enterprise.
Yeah, he played Ensign Rivers and in engineering. And, you know, he had a couple little scenes. I think he had a line once.
Yeah.
But you can see, you know, a chubby little Seth MacFarlane on set, and he just seems so happy.
I'm on Star Trek.
to be working on Star Trek,
yeah.
He's a bigger Star Trek fan than both of us combined.
Although he's not as big as he was then, because he's clearly been hitting the gym and had a little cosmetic surgery done, I think, and clearly has somebody watching what he eats for him, because he looks much better on the Orville.
He's, you know, he finally got successful enough where he's like, hey, I need to work out a little bit. And I know that everybody on that show, before they start filming, because I keep track of all of their Twitter accounts. There's always like that month before they start filming where all of them are saying, oh, I've got to go work out. I'm working out, and posting videos of them working out. Got to get ready for filming.
It's my last slice of pecan pie before you start shooting.
Pretty much. Yeah. Speaking of pecan pie, which is a thing called food, which I'm a fan of.
Me too.
You know, in season 2 of Star Trek Discovery, we're going to be getting introduced to Captain Christopher Pike, played by Anson Mount, who's the star of that show, Hell on Wheels.
Haven't seen it.
Yeah, well, I follow him on Twitter, because I follow everybody on Twitter, because, you know, it's a great way to keep track of all these news. And I love his account. Or his page, because all he does is post pictures of food. Usually from the crafting table on Star Trek production. He's just always like, this is what I'm eating today. And he's like, yeah, yummy chicken. It's funny. I'm like, dude, this guy's great. Because everyone else is posting like, oh, I voted, this, this, and that. And he's just posting food.
I actually like the vibe that I'm getting from him in the trailers.
Oh, yeah. See, one thing... You know, now of course it's a trailer. We have no idea how the show's going to be. But the season 2 of Star Trek Discovery seems so much better. Not saying that it's going to be, you know, not an abomination, but it might not be. I just don't think they could ever get over what they did in season 1. But it seems like when I see the trailer, it looks fun. It looks a little bit like a classic Star Trek vibe from Captain Pike and his group, because they're wearing uniforms that look a little bit more like classic Star Trek. And, you know, there's a fun vibe. He's actually feels like a real Star Trek captain with, you know, hope and giving words of wisdom, things like that. But I just don't know if it's going to amount to anything. But I do lament the fact that I'm like, this season here, season 2, seems like where they should have started.
Right.
And maybe done the whole war with the Klingons in season 3. So I don't even think they're going to get a season 3 at this point. I think they're just treading water so they have some sort of Star Trek show out until we get the Picard series.
They just need something to keep people paying that whatever, you know, depending on the tier they choose on CBS All Access. The obnoxious thing about it is you can pay like, what, $6 a month and you still have to watch commercials?
Yeah, they have limited commercials for $6 a month, but you can get rid of those commercials if you go up to the $10 a month package. I'd rather have a ton of commercials and watch it free on television, but, you know, that's me. And apparently a lot of other people, because the biggest thing that everyone complains about, and it's obvious, and it's one reason, besides the show just not living up to Star Trek, the fact that we all know they only brought back Star Trek to get fans to pay for their app, as opposed to saying, hey, let's make a great Star Trek show. And because people will love it, because we're doing a great job, we're trying to do a great job, it'll turn into profits. Because, you know, we can't get ourselves everything. Every piece of media out there is to make profits. Everything we've ever loved is to make money. But it usually comes from a place of, let's make something great. If people like it, it'll turn into money, and we like money. This, instead, their CBS's motivations were corrupt. They're like, we need something that's going to support this app. I know, Star Trek. That's a name people know. We can use that name recognition to get people to support our app because we want to have, you know, we want to be the next Netflix. And I'm like, come on, CBS. All your shows that you have on right now, all their new shows are just reboots of 80s shows. If you if you look at CBS's channel, all their shows are like Magnum PI, MacGyver, Hawaii 5-0, just all new versions of stuff that was popular in the 80s.
You know, my dream for the Star Trek IP is that the the Star Trek loving community just raises a whole bunch of money and buys the IP off of Paramount and CBS and says, okay, it's free. We're setting up this governing body that's, you know, the official canon, but anybody who wants to make any sort of fan film, you know, knock yourself out. You want to raise a little money and, you know, juice up the special effects and sell some t-shirts and stuff, that's fine. You know, we know if it's coming from a place of love, we're not going to bother you.
And yeah, absolutely.
That's the dream. The number two dream is that Netflix buys it. Because the Netflix model is to basically just say, here's some money to a production company, make something, and we'll put it up. And if people watch it, we'll pay you more to make another season. And they're not micromanagers. Yeah. And Star Trek Discovery got micromanaged by Les Moonves, who was the guy who made the decision to cancel Star Trek Enterprise a decade and a half ago. The guy doesn't like science fiction. He doesn't like Star Trek in particular, and he doesn't like the Star Trek audience. But he's willing to manipulate them and extort them, basically, to get them to buy the app. But, you know, has no regard whatsoever for the intellectual property.
Yeah, and that's the problem. And the truth is, everyone that worked on Star Trek, that loves Star Trek, all work on the Orville now. The writers, the producers.
Guest stars, directors.
Actors, yeah. Yeah, directors. All the people that made wonderful Star Trek back in the 90s and a little bit of the early 2000s all moved over to the Orville. And I don't think, I don't know if Discovery has any Star Trek alum.
Jonathan Frakes directed an episode of Discovery.
Oh, yeah. He might have done two, didn't he? Well, he did a couple. At least I know he has one last season, and he's doing another one this season. But that's not the creation process. He's just working with what he's given.
Right.
So we'll have some really cool, camera angles that episode, something like that. But the people that actually create it, that make the decisions, they're not really necessarily fans of Star Trek, and because those people are all working on the Orville, and it shows.
You know, an irony is that the original Star Trek was broadcast on NBC, not CBS, and CBS actually turned it down. The production company that owned it and made it gave the pilot, offered the pilot to CBS, and CBS is like, I don't think so. And through just a Byzantine process of corporate mergers and, divisions and transfers of intellectual property, here we are half a century later, CBS owns the intellectual property of Star Trek and has deliberately denied anybody the permission to make Star Trek that looks and feels like Star Trek.
Yeah, well, they'll also sue you if you're a fan. They don't mind it if a fan makes a fan film, as long as that fan film isn't of quality.
Yeah, as long as it sucks, they won't bother
you. Yeah, as long
you.
As it's not of quality. But if it makes something of quality, they will sue you. And my dream, you mentioned about you. And my dream, you mentioned about the fans buying the property. A lot of people have said that to me. I'm like, oh, that'd be great, but I don't think we'd be able to raise, because I'm sure they're going to put a heavy price on it, like $1 billion or something like that. I think, didn't Disney buy Star Wars from old George for like $3 billion or something like that?
Something like that, yeah.
I don't think Star Trek would be worth that amount, but maybe a billion or close to a billion. So I don't think that we'd be able to do it. But my dream would not actually be to have Netflix buy the show, even though I think Netflix would do a great job with it. I would like Seth MacFarlane to buy Star Trek with Fox and Fox takeover, because they've proven that they care about that type of content.
Sort of.
Fox is, yeah, and Fox is becoming a kind of a sci-fi. They're bringing sci-fi back. I mean, not only do they have the Orville, which is doing great for them, and it's a huge priority, they also have Cosmos. And they seem to really care about not only science fiction, but actual science. And you know, if Seth took over it, he would do his best to make sure it was the most legit Star Trek ever. But I don't know if that would work either, because you don't want something taken away from the Orville spotlight on the same channel.
Yeah, now that the Orville exists, Seth MacFarlane doing Star Trek is off the table, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah. I would like it maybe if Seth just bought the rights to all the old Star Trek so he could do whatever he wants with it, like, you know, put it on, I don't know. It's already everywhere. All old Star Trek, you can, it's on Hulu, it's on Netflix, it's on Amazon Prime. It's available everywhere, unlike the new Star Trek. And
yeah, which is in a locked vault with the lathering guard dogs growling at you as you approach.
Yeah, Netflix would do, I think, do a great job with it. They'd hire the best people. They put out an amazing-looking show. Of course, we'd only get 10 episodes.
Yeah, or 13. 13 episodes.
Well, I don't know. Netflix is all, isn't all their shows 10 episodes?
The Marvel shows are all 13 episodes, which, you know, for some of those shows was too many. Like for Luke Cage, man, if they had ended season one after like episode 7, I would have been right on. But you know, the second half of the season just drug on. It's like, come on, guys. I mean, they want to keep you watching, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So if you bring them a 7-episode story, they're like, okay, stretch it out a bit.
Yeah. Well, what might be great with Netflix is if they bought the rights to Star Trek, they'd have they'd make a Star Trek show, but they'd probably make multiple Star Trek shows, which would be nice. I would actually like, and I've thought this for many years now, a Star Trek anthology series.
Yes.
Like, you know, like not dark like Black Mirror, but a different episode every week that takes place in the Star Trek world, but is on a different, you know, a different person, a different crew, a different ship, a different planet. It's just an anthology series that it's a different story every week, but it takes place in the Star Trek universe.
That's a very expensive proposition because you have to design uniforms
different
and
sets.
Ships and sets and all this stuff, you know, for all these. If you do a Star Trek show, like a normal Star Trek show, you're reusing the same sets, the same uniforms. I mean, the same elements that you created to make the show, you use them again and again and again. And but what I would love to see is, well, I should say that CBS has hired one of the Rick and Morty writers to create a humorous Star Trek animated series. I would like to see an animated series, a Star Trek animated series that was not humorous, that was more like the 70s animated Star Trek show, except higher quality, better animation, something more along the lines of what Lucasfilm has done with their animated TV series. And that, you know, rather than building all of these sets and all of these, costumes and things, you just create them digitally, and you can have this show that goes all over the place in the Star Trek universe. You can have a show that's set on a Klingon ship, you're a few episodes, and then another one that takes place, you know, over in the Orion Syndicate, and then, you know, you could have a Borg episode where you don't have any familiar Star Trek characters. You know, just what are the Borg doing over in their quadrant of the galaxy? That would be great.
I'd actually like to see a Borg origin story.
If you read about the Borg, we're getting super geeky now, but if you read about the Borg, they have reoccurred several times over the history of the Star Trek, you know, our galaxy. They tend to, they pop up, they flourish, they expand, and then something prunes them back, and then they come back again. And they're very cyclical that way.
And it's, it's like in First Contact, in the TNG movie, First Contact, the Borg went back in time And when they got there, because they wanted to take over Earth, you know, in an earlier, when Earth was vulnerable, but they were trying to contact the Borg of that time as well.
Right.
In the Delta Quadrant, I think is where they were, to start making their way towards Earth. So, you know, they're trying to, you know, get together with the Borg from back in the day.
The old school Borg.
The Borg get around.
They do. There's a song about that.
About the Borg getting around?
Yeah. It's sung in the first person. We get around, I think that's what they say.
We get around, resistance is futile.
We're just going to riff on it for the next 9 minutes. We're just going to sing this impromptu We Get Around Borg song.
We all live in a black Borg cube.
Well, hey, we have been talking about Star Trek, and we have been talking about the Orville, and we have been talking about YouTube and such. You have a website, egotasticfuntime.com, but basically mm-hmm. what's there are YouTube videos.
Yeah, I used to be way more proactive with I do blogs and stuff like that. And eventually I was like, okay, I can't do this. I can't keep this up and make content. And if I'm not making content, there's no point in having this website.
Right. And sleep and go to the day job.
Yeah, and I got to go to the day job, which takes enough time anyway, because also, you know, I'll be at the day job thinking, okay, when I get home, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this for the channel, I'm going to write this. And then as soon as I get to my front door and I open it up, I instantly go, that day of, you know, working that full-time job, dead-end job, just has zapped any motivation from me. I'm just going to sit in this chair and stare at the wall for a couple hours.
But that can't be entirely true, because you put out a lot of content.
Yeah, but I don't even put out a portion of the amount of content that I want to put out.
Well, yeah. I don't really have a day job, and I don't put out as much content as I'd like to.
Yeah. I mean, lately I've just been thinking, gosh, wouldn't it be nice if I can just go downtown and eat lunch in the daytime on a nice, beautiful day on a weekday. Wouldn't that be nice? But it's never going to happen. Because I'm like, but maybe someday it'll happen. If I keep putting out content, because, you know, the content does well. It pays some bills. But hopefully someday it'll pay more bills and I can have my dream of eating lunch at a restaurant on a Wednesday afternoon.
In where do you live? Somewhere in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I currently live in the only place worth living in Oklahoma, Tulsa. I moved here a few years ago from Los Angeles because it costs a lot of money to live in Los Angeles or anywhere in the state of California, which is where I'm born and raised. So I moved out to Tulsa, which is actually the last couple of years I've really started to enjoy it. It is really cool, hip town. It's starting to grow in a certain way where it's starting to feel like it might be the next cool Nashville town pretty soon. We got e-scooters here, you guys. We got microbreweries. We have artisan tacos. We have everything here, and it's great. We got this amazing Art Deco city where sometimes I'm walking around and I'm thinking, man, it kind of looks like New York, except for without all the people.
And without the you know, block after block after block of glass and steel skyscrapers.
Yeah. You know, we got some tall buildings, but they're not skyscrapers. So I'm really enjoying this town, and, you know, lots of great shows, great people come through. Last week I went and saw Nick Offerman and Megan Mullally, at a book. And anniversary of the book that they put out last year, and it was a great couple hours experience. I did it all at a high school auditorium. It was great.
Well, where I was going with the talk of your website and the fact that it basically just houses your YouTube videos is that you are very dependent on the platform of YouTube. And
I am.
If you were to mm-hmm. be deplatformed for any number of reasons, you'd be set back pretty seriously.
I would, and and here's the thing is I didn't plan my original plan, and this is actually something I tried to do for years, was to spread it around, you know, do a little bit on Facebook, a little bit on Patreon, you know, Twitter, YouTube. YouTube is a great one because it's monetized. Twitch, all that stuff. And I was doing that, and then eventually I was like, okay, this is too much. I can't handle this. So I decided, okay, YouTube is monetized, so I'm just going to put my stuff on there and just share it on all the other platforms, which is what I do. And it works, but also, I mean, if things happen where I was demonetized for some reason, which I don't see why I would, I have actually a pretty good relationship with YouTube. They, you know, when I post something, you know, Star Trek or Orville related, they put it out there for me. I mean, it shows up in searches, top of the list. So it took a lot of years to get to that point, but YouTube is very nice to me. And they didn't used to be back when I was just part of the noise. I had to, you know, fight my way out of the noise realm. That's also part of YouTube.
You know, you did a video a week or so ago about emergency meetings at CBS about Star Trek Discovery, which you were sort of riffing on information provided by another YouTuber whose name is Doom Rooster or something like that. And
I was doing something else, but yeah. I don't know if I'm allowed to say.
Exactly. Doom Rooster was basically saying that, you know, there was CBS executives had this emergency meeting to say, you know, what are we going to do about Star Trek? It's a total dumpster fire. We got to fix it. And I wanted to know more about that. So I just searched emergency meeting CBS, and the top result was your video. I couldn't find anything else.
Yeah, I saw that as well. Well, it's because, and also it's a rumor. It's a rumor that I believe to be true, but it is a rumor from that YouTuber's channel, and he says it's a rumor, but he has contacts in CBS or in the Star Trek production who's given him good information before, and he says it's a rumor, but he believes it's to be true, and I believe the same thing, but I also let everybody know this is just part of the rumor mill right now, which everything you hear on the internet about anything that's just starting is a rumor, in my opinion, because the facts always change the next day.
And sometimes those rumors spill out onto the radio. You know, I'm going to have to bring this conversation to a close. We're down to about the last 90 seconds. We've mentioned the name of your YouTube channel and website repeatedly, but maybe you should say it again.
Well, my channel is Egotastic Fun Time. On the YouTube, but also if you just search Talking the Orville, you'll also find me because that's my main thing that I talk about is the Orville, season 2 coming out December 30th on Fox after football. And you also go to EgotasticFunTime.com, but just, you know, type in Egotastic Fun Time, Talking the Orville, anything like that, and you're going to find me. And we're going to have an Egotastic Fun Time together if you click play on any of my videos.
All right. Well, you know, the things we've talked about are the things that I wanted to talk about. And
you talked about it.
Well, we both did. All right. We are down to the closing seconds. So, JP of Egotastic Fun Time, thank you very much for calling in to Sea Realm Radio. I hope to talk to you again in the future.
Same. Thanks. Love you.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody. That was JP of Egotastic Fun Time. We are down to like 12 seconds. So let me just say, this is Sea Realm Radio. I am KMO. I will be here again in 1 week's time. I will talk to you then. Until that time, I hope that you will stay well.
You're listening to the Sea Realm Podcast.
Your mind, 1 week at a time.
All right, that is all for this episode. I don't really have any closing thoughts. I expressed my opinions up front and then over the course of the conversation with JP. This was a fun conversation for me, and if you're still here listening at the end, I guess it was at least engaging for you, or, you know, maybe you were tied to a chair or something and just did not have the ability to turn off the podcast. I hope that wasn't the case. In any event, Star Trek Discovery Season 2 premieres on January 17th. I looked it up. JP was right about that. And The Orville, Season 2, premieres on the 30th of this month. So in just a few weeks. I am genuinely and unreservedly excited about Season 2 of The Orville. My thoughts on Star Trek Discovery are more complex. It's not as uniformly like hateful and horrible as some of the people make it out to be. You know, just as online, you know, on YouTube and in other places, there is a cultural industry devoted to denigrating particular personalities. Like there's a whole, you know, I hate Jordan Peterson industry on YouTube. Well, there's a whole I hate Star Trek Discovery industry on YouTube. And I watch some of those videos. I follow some of those channels. But I don't, you know, my opinion of the show is not so one-sided as what is presented in those venues. There are things I like about it. But the things I don't like about it, I don't like with a passion, really, which, you know, is silly. I understand. It is a TV show. But it's also a mythology. It is a mythology that is older than I am. You know, Star Trek, the original series, premiered in 1966, 2 years before my birth. I cannot remember a time when I was not aware of Star Trek. And Star Trek The Next Generation had a significant impact on me because I was in my late teens, early 20s when that, you know, show was on. And I watched it religiously. And, you know, that's not a metaphor. That's not evocative language. That's not any sort of poetic license. I mean, it was as much as a religious commitment for me as anything actually religious, you know, traditionally religious has ever been for me. That show has meant quite a bit to me. Not just that show, but that fictional universe, that vision of the future has meant a lot to me for my entire life. And it really irritates me to see it treated with such disrespect. So if you want to comment on this, you can leave a comment on the page for this episode on crealm.com, or you can post it to the CRealm Podcast MeWe discussion group. That's at MeWe.com. The Friends of the CRealm group still exists on Facebook, but I have no access to Facebook and no intention of returning to Facebook. So you cannot communicate with me there. But as far as I know, you can still communicate with other CRealm listeners there. So if, you know, that is your wish and you're on Facebook, and, you know, let's face it, most everybody is, that venue is still open to you. But if you want me to see your comment, better to post it to MeWe. All right, that is all for this episode of the CRealm Podcast. Thanks for listening, and I will talk to you again pretty soon. Bye-bye.